All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the newest edition of the Peyton Doyle Show. And in case you forgot, I'm Peyton Doyle, host of the Peyton Doyle Show. It has been since May 14th, 2021, 11 months, nearly 49 weeks, and exactly 341 days since I have been live here behind this camera and behind this microphone doing this show. But man, it feels so good to be back. I'm going to be honest here, guys. Real talk before I get into anything. I didn't know if I would ever do this again. Life got busy. I graduated high school. I moved. I started working full-time for the first time in my life. And a whole bunch of other things were going on all at once, and it got in between my focus on doing this show. That's the main reason for my absence. Whenever I do something, I want to make sure that I'm giving it all I've got, 100%, no matter what. And I felt as if I could no longer give 100% to the show anymore. But recently, in these past like 2, maybe 3 months, I was feeling a major itch to come back, and I devised a plan to make sure to work everything into my schedule so that way I could give 100% behind this camera and behind this microphone for all of you to post the best content I could possibly post. And now I'm back. In the midst of the craziest offseason in the history of the NFL that has featured Tom Brady retiring and then being pulling the most Tom Brady thing you could possibly do and say, actually, no, I'm not retiring. I'm coming back after 40 days. Deshaun Watson and Amari Cooper being traded to the Cleveland Browns. Devontae Adams being traded to the Raiders. Tyreek Hill being traded to the Dolphins. Russell Wilson being traded to the Broncos. Matt Ryan being traded to the Colts. And a whole lot more that I'm totally forgetting about right now. It's totally not even crossing my mind because it's just like overload of all this news that came in right as the offseason started. It was incredible. And on top of the craziest offseason in NFL history, this is also going to be one of the most unpredictable drafts in recent memory. Name a draft where we didn't know or have a good idea or understanding of who the number one overall pick was going to be almost less than a week away from the draft. That is incredible. We also don't know if there is going to be a quarterback in the top 10. What if Carolina doesn't pick a quarterback? What if in a crazy quarterback-driven league, a quarterback falls out of the top 10? And then, on top of all the stuff that's going on in the NFL right now, the NBA playoffs just started. They have just begun. So you best believe I sure have a lot to talk about today. Later on in the show, at about 10:30, I'll be bringing on a quite familiar guest, Justin Marville from This Justin. He will be giving us his thoughts on who he thinks will be going number one overall in this year's draft, and also his thoughts and predictions on this year's NBA playoffs. Speaking of the NBA playoffs, there's one series in particular that just seems different. It feels different. That, of course, would be Nets versus Celtics. This is not your typical second seed versus seventh seed first round sweep. And if it's not a sweep in four games, it's a gentleman sweep in five. That game one was no game one. Normally in game one, you're trying to kind of feel the other team out, you know, kind of get a sense for how they're playing and adjust later on in game two. Clearly, neither team was looking to do that. Every player on the court for both teams played like it was game seven, like there was no tomorrow. I love that. I love everything about that. How could you not love everything about that? That's exactly what playoff basketball is all about. Not only were the players into it, the fans were into it as well. It almost had a college basketball kind of energy to it with the fans in Boston. It was incredible. From the tip, basically every time that Kyrie Irving touched the ball, a whole flock of boo birds were released. Kyrie had fun with it too. While the boo birds were out late in the fourth, he decided to flip the Celtics fans the double bird. He got fined, of course he did, but you know what? I don't have a problem with it. Yes, the NBA needed to fine him because there's a certain amount of professionalism that you need to maintain as an NBA and as an NBA athlete and as a professional athlete in general, because there are kids watching and they do look up to these athletes and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But one, Kyrie is backing it up. He's backing it up with his play, scoring 39 points to go along with 5 rebounds and 6 assists and also 4 steals. If he was doing that to the fans and also not playing well, I'd call him a cornball. I'd be like, listen, bro, listen, you're giving the fans the double bird and you're dropping 20 inefficiently like Kevin Durant did. We'll get into that later. But Kyrie doing that and also playing well makes it entertaining. If he was doing that and not playing well, it's corny. There's a fine line, and I think Kyrie is on the right side of that fine line this time. 2, this is entertaining. It builds more drama, and it builds more intensity. So while the NBA has to fine Kyrie Irving, yes, they do, I don't have a problem with it. I don't think anyone should really have a problem with it. It's just fans versus player. And that's the great thing about the NBA experience. What sport? In the NFL, you have distance between yourself and the field. In the NBA, there's not. If you have courtside tickets, you're courtside. You could reach out and touch an NBA player if you wanted to. That is what is so great about the NBA. The NBA experience and fan and player experience is something that is unmatched in every other sport. And this is just great because I don't think it's out of hate that they're booing or giving the bird. I think it's out of competitiveness and all good fun between Kyrie Irving and Boston fans. But now, imagine this. Kyrie in Boston for Game 7. I remember watching Game 1. I have never, after Game 1 of a series, hoped so badly that we get 7 games of a series, especially in the first round. I was thinking, Kyrie in TD Garden, in Boston, against the Celtics, in Game 7? Oh my goodness, that would be probably the most exciting game of this season. As far as my prediction as to who's going to win this series, I'm going to say Brooklyn takes it in 7 games, and here's why. Boston is a gritty and tough team. That is what makes them great. They work very hard to get buckets on the offensive end, and they grind their butts off and play extremely physical defense. But it takes more out of them to win a game than it does for Brooklyn to win a game. Brooklyn is the opposite of Boston. Their play is effortless, especially on the offensive end. They don't work their butts off on defense, but it doesn't matter because when Kyrie and Kevin Durant are both clicking, it's impossible to guard. It doesn't matter how physical you play on the defensive end of the ball. They both can effortlessly, on command, drop 30 in the same game. Also, with that being said, I don't think the Celtics will be able to contain Kevin Durant like they did in Game 1 again. Durant went 9 for 24 from the field, including only 1 for 5 from the three-point line. I just don't foresee that happening again. And even after they shut down Durant and held him to this terrible shooting night, it took a game-winning buzzer beater at the end of the game for the Celtics to win. So even after they contained Durant, for almost the entire game, he was playing extremely inefficient. He didn't seem like he was matching up to the physical intensity that Boston was playing out on the defensive end of the ball. It still came down to literally tenths of a second when Jason Tatum scored that game-winning basket on at the buzzer to win by one. I don't see that happening again. If Durant had an average shooting night, if Durant shot averagely from the field, the Nets would have won game one. I just think in a series that's probably going to go to six or seven games, it takes a lot out of the Celtics physically to play their style of basketball. So I think that as each game goes on and the fatigue gets more and more and their legs start feeling heavier and heavier, their defense is naturally going to loosen up a bit. And it's impossible, as I've said before, it's impossible to contain both Kyrie and Durant for the entire series. So for those reasons, because Boston is extremely physical and I think it's going to take a toll on them in a seven-game series, and Brooklyn's effortless style of play and their firepower is always going to give them a chance to win. So for that, I have Brooklyn in seven games in this series. But man, this is going to be an incredible series. And we're going to talk later on me, when I bring on Justin, we're going to talk about, is the winner going to possibly represent the East in the finals? I think that's an interesting question because there's a lot of question marks in the East this year. It's wide open. It's wide open. That's why these playoffs are so, so great. So as everyone probably knows, the Cleveland Browns have traded for quarterback Deshaun Watson. I don't feel as if I need to justify to any of you as to why they decided to do that. If you watched Baker Mayfield play and you watched Deshaun Watson play, you can tell a clear difference between the two of them. I don't think that the Browns had a choice here. Deshaun Watson chose. He chose. He didn't have to be. He wasn't forced into. He chose to be a Cleveland Brown. I don't care what it costs you. Listen, when the trade rumors started popping up for the first time after the 2020 season with Deshaun Watson, I can be quoted as saying, if I was an NFL GM, I'd give up my house and my car and three first-round picks for Deshaun Watson. He hasn't played in a year, okay? I get that. But guess what? I don't care. People seem to forget what he was doing with a whole lot of nothing in Houston. He was doing a whole lot with a whole little. The Browns did what they had to do to upgrade at the most important and most valuable position in the entire sport. However, Baker Mayfield said this on the podcast, "You Never Know," last week, claiming that he feels disrespected by the Browns trading for Watson this offseason. Here's the clip.
"Honestly, I have no regrets of my time in Cleveland, of what I tried to give to that place.
Right.
And true Clevelanders and true Browns fans know that. And that's why I can walk away from the whole situation feeling like I did it.
And now, do you feel like the way the office has handled it has been disrespectful to you, given where you came in and where they are now? And
I mean, yeah, the respect thing is like, it's all going to be like a personal opinion.
Yeah,
like, and I feel disrespected, 100%. Mm-hmm. Because I was told one thing and they completely did another. That's what I'm in the middle of right now.
Look, listen, I see where Baker Mayfield is coming from. I truly and honestly do. He did give Cleveland his all. He was drafted to a team that was 0-16 before he got there. He did have four different head coaches in the first 3 years of his career. Baker has been through a lot in Cleveland, and he has been nothing but loving and embraceful to the organization and the city during his time there. And for that, I applaud him. However, this needs to be said as well. For 2 years in a row, Baker Mayfield was given a team with a good coach, a great offensive line, a great running game, solid receivers, and a pretty good defense. And in those two seasons, what could you say about his play? You kind of have your right foot in, your left foot out. You don't know. It's been mediocre at best. That's the best thing you can say about it. Any quarterback in the league would have loved to be in that situation. You ask Russell Wilson. You ask Russell Wilson if he wanted to be behind that Browns O-line or behind that Seahawks O-line. You ask Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson if he wanted to be behind that O-line or their O-lines that they had on their team. And if you ask if they'd rather have Nick Chubb or David Johnson or Chris Carson, who's made out of glass. Every quarterback in the league is taking that situation 10 times out of 10, and Baker Mayfield underperformed. Listen, one thing that you could say about Baker Mayfield is that all he needed to do last year was play turnover-free football. And that's something he has never been able to do since he's gotten in the league. From the day that Baker Mayfield was drafted in 2018, nobody, not even the interception king himself, Jameis Winston, has thrown more interceptions than Baker Mayfield. So yes, Baker has been through a lot in Cleveland. But when the skies got clear and it was his time to shine, he missed his moment and he underperformed time after time again. So when you're Andrew Berry and you're the general manager of the Cleveland Browns, in the offseason, you sit back and you look at your division. You look at the Bengals, Joe Burrow, who's blossoming into a top quarterback right in front of our eyes. And on top of that, just had a terrific playoff run and almost led his team to a Super Bowl victory in pretty much his first year as his first full year as a starter in the NFL. Then you see Lamar Jackson, former league MVP, has won in the playoffs and creates a multitude of problems for defenders by being the dynamic and electrifying playmaker that he is. Then you take an even bigger step back and look at the quarterbacks in your conference. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Derek Carr, now Russell Wilson too. Does Baker Mayfield have the ability to go toe-to-toe with any of these guys? The answer to that question is simply no, he doesn't. And if he does, he hasn't shown it in his 4 years in the NFL. But you know who does have the ability to match up and go toe-to-toe with all the big dog quarterbacks of the AFC? Deshaun Watson does. Sure, he costs you the pretty penny, and you took a huge PR hit due to the allegations against him. But what would you rather have as the front office of an organization? You take the risk on Deshaun Watson. You pay him the pretty penny. You take the PR hit. But you have a chance to win a Super Bowl, if not multiple Super Bowls, within the next 5 to 10 years. Or you stick with the comfortable, safer Baker Mayfield. And you end up having to pay him quite a large amount of money regardless. Of course, not as much money as Deshaun Watson, but you'd be paying Baker Mayfield within the $35 to $40 million per year range if you decide to extend him. And guess what? Once you do that, you're stuck in mediocrity for a decade. Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Jimmy Garoppolo. These are examples of guys who set their team back because they were signed to long-term extensions, but simply were mediocre quarterbacks. They were signed too early in their careers and they underperformed. The Browns wisely avoided falling into that trap. Give me the elite quarterback that costs me the pretty penny and loses me the likability contest, but wins me Super Bowls over the mediocre quarterback who is known and comfortable, but is still going to end up demanding a good amount of money at the end of the day. Any day of the week, I'm taking the elite quarterback with a price over the safe, comfortable, mediocre quarterback. Now, speaking of quarterbacks, this is an interesting situation we have here. Kyler Murray reportedly will not play without a contract extension this season. He doesn't want to play under his rookie deal, which is paying around $5.5 million this season. Obviously, in the world of quarterbacks, that's awfully low. But many believe that Kyler Murray may have already played his final snap in a Cardinals uniform. This is what Kyler has had to say about the whole situation. I am an Arizona Cardinal. I've done nothing but give my all to the Cardinals and will continue to do that. I'm really not too worried about my future as a Cardinal. Yeah, he's not too worried because he knows if the Cardinals don't give him the $40 million per year contract he's looking for, somebody else will. I will say one thing about Kyler Murray that makes me hesitant when I try to assess how great he will become in the NFL. He has all the talent in the world, all the talent there is. But when I watch his mannerisms and the way he carries himself, he reminds me of a baseball player. He reminds me of a baseball player. And now what does that mean for someone to be like a baseball player? Very laid back, nonchalant, kind of self-centered in a way, not really too worried about what's going on around him. You're just kind of out there playing ball. Now, this doesn't mean, let me make this very clear. Please listen to me when I say this. This doesn't mean I'm saying Kyler Murray is lazy. This doesn't mean I'm saying Kyler Murray isn't a good teammate. This doesn't mean that Kyler Murray isn't a great man and a great friend. And this most certainly doesn't mean Kyler Murray doesn't love the game of football. But what it does mean is he's hard to figure out. Kind of keeps to himself. He's kind of edgy in a way. I'm telling you, these guys who are like baseball players, they're different cats. Look at Aaron Rodgers. Now, Rodgers doesn't give me baseball vibes. He doesn't give me baseball player vibes. He gives me kind of like California, I don't care about anything that doesn't pertain to me kind of vibe. But it's okay because California dude vibe and baseball player vibe are kind of similar. But it's worked for Rodgers. Four-time MVP, Super Bowl champion, future Hall of Famer. But one thing about Aaron Rodgers is that his whole career, nobody can really figure him out. Teammates either love him or hate him, and he either loves or hate them back. Nobody really knew whether he was staying or leaving in Green Bay. But these guys like Rodgers and like Kyler are never going to be the leaders like Tom Brady or Dak Prescott or Lamar Jackson or even Russell Wilson. Also, on top of that, Kyler Murray hasn't really done anything substantial in the NFL yet. Every year is the same story. He and the Cardinals start off red hot, and come December, they're ice cold. Now, a lot of that may be coaching, and probably is, because let me be clear. I think Cliff Kingsbury is a terrible NFL head coach, and I personally have no clue how he got an NFL head coaching job to begin with. But anyways, back to Kyler. How much are you willing to pay a guy who's not a very inspiring leader and also hasn't accomplished nearly anything at all yet in his NFL career and also doesn't really care about playing for your organization or for your team? Because in the end, if you don't pay him, someone else will pay him the money he wants. Because let's be honest, if Kyler wanted to be an Arizona Cardinal, if he really wanted to be a Cardinal, instead of saying, I'm not too worried about my future as a Cardinal, he probably would have phrased it like, I love Arizona and I want to stay as an Arizona Cardinal. That's how he would have phrased it. Instead, he just gave us facts. I'm an Arizona Cardinal. Yeah, we know. That's like when someone's in college and they have a job just to pay the bills at like Burger King, and you ask them about their future and they say, I am a Burger King employee. Like, yes, yes, you are. You are a Burger King employee. But what about that accounting degree that you're working towards? Like, okay, Kyler, you're an Arizona Cardinal, but what about you deleting everything pertaining to the Cardinals off your social media? What about that? What about you declining to show up to voluntary workouts with the Arizona Cardinals that started yesterday? How much are you willing to pay for Kyler? If I'm the GM of the Cardinals, I'm saying, nope, not right now. Win a playoff game this season, and we can start negotiating a new contract. Whatever happened to in the NFL, whatever happened to prove it years? You know, you go up to them and say, hey, we know you want a new deal. We want you to stay in Arizona, but right now you have 2 years left on your current deal. How about, if you do well this year and you continue to improve, we could start negotiating a new contract in the offseason. And honestly, that might end up being more money for Kyler Murray, because what's going to happen is when Lamar gets paid, when these other guys that are due to get paid a lot of money, it raises the price for Kyler as well. So if you go out there and prove it this year, you're almost in a better situation than you are getting the money this year. I just think this should be a prove it year for Kyler before getting himself a new contract. I just don't think he's shown enough to say that he's worth up to $40 million per year. Now it's time to bring on a good friend of mine here in the sports podcast world, making his third consecutive appearance here on the show. It is who other than Justin Marville. How you doing this morning, Justin?
I am doing great. It has been too long in coming since we've done something together. And you know, I've been behind the scenes telling you the Peyton Doyle Show had to return. So I am so ecstatic just to be part of the big return.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I knew because during my absence, if you guys don't know, the only show that I ever appeared on, like it was probably like once every 3 months, was Justin's show there at This Justin. So when I decided I was coming back, I was like, I have to get Justin on here, man, because he's the one guy who I've been working with in my absence. So it's great to have you on. I'm glad that you're here, man. I know you just heard my little tangent about this whole Kyler Murray situation right before I brought you on. So let me start off with this first. How do you think that the Cardinals should handle the situation with Kyler Murray?
So far, I mean, they've not handled it great. Like, they could have taken high road when the whole situation came out. And instead of leaking the stories that Kyler Murray is immature and is not exactly a leader, a problem in the locker room, which may or may not be true, they didn't need to do that. They could have just taken the high road, said that we're trying to work out things with our star quarterback. Things are not exactly going as we want in terms of our contract situation, but eventually we will get this figured out. That is how I figured any mature professional organization would have handled the situation. And having heard your soliloquy on the entire situation, you are right in everything, Peyton. But the problem is, as you alluded to, the Cardinals are going to have absolutely no choice but to pay him close to the contract that he deserves for so many reasons. Like, well, two in particular, the quarterback market out there is basically dry now. Now that you have your team has Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson has now moved on to Denver, Aaron Rodgers has stood here in Wisconsin. Like, there's no other quarterback of note to be had. And we know in this age, in this day and age, Peyton, in this NFL, you can't win without a franchise quarterback. And whether we like him or not, whether he breaks down at the end of the season or not, whether he's not accomplished anything or not, Kyler Murray is indeed a franchise quarterback. And the second and most important reason why I think that they're going to have to pay him, this draft is very, very weak at quarterback. It's not like last year where we had five going in the first round, and justifiably so. Like, you're hearing so many holes being picked in Kenny Pickett's name, in the guy Malik. Like these quarterbacks are not ready, and I don't know if any of these guys are going to starters. And there is nothing for certain to say that next season's draft class is going to be much better either. So they're going to be forced to pay him, Peyton.
Yeah, I agree. I think, look, one way or another, Kyler Murray is going to get his money. Whether it's from the Arizona Cardinals or from another team, Kyler Murray is going to end up getting his money. But I just feel as if right now, this should be a prove-it year. And it might end up working in his favor. Like I said, it might end up getting him more money than he would have if he signed a contract this year. But I want to talk about this year's draft because you alluded to that just now.
Before you go on, though, let me just say, though, okay, as much as I agree he's going to have to be paid, if I'm Arizona, I'm not paying him a cent more than Dak Prescott's $160 million deal. Like, that, mm-hmm. That is it. I am not going into the Aaron Rodgers, into the Deshaun Watson realm. I'm not going into the Patrick Mahomes. It's like, you're taking $160 million and not a penny more. Because as you said, Kyler Murray has proven absolutely nothing in this league.
Exactly. And whether it be because of coaching or the situation that's going on, we don't know. But at the end of the day, I don't think that you should get 40 million. Like you said, Rodgers, Mahomes, Watson. I don't think that money should be available for a guy who hasn't won a playoff game yet. It doesn't make sense to me. That's why the whole situation is weird, because Kyler's kind of shy. He's not very outspoken. So it's like, we don't know what's going on. It reminds me a lot of last year with Rodgers in Green Bay. Rodgers is kind of the same way. Like, we don't really know what's up with him. So this year's draft, though, I do want to talk about that, because this is, I mean, it's incredible. It's as unpredictable as ever. And I believe now we're 8 days away from the draft. Nobody seems to have any idea as to who is even going to be the number one overall pick. I don't remember this happening since probably Baker Mayfield in 2018. That was like a surprise number one, but I remember even hearing rumblings a week beforehand saying that the Browns were expected to take him number one, but it wasn't for sure. But this year, no one knows anything. Who do you think the Jaguars are going to take number one overall?
I don't even know if the Jaguars are going to keep the pick, because the rumors are that Trent Baalke, like the rest of us, is not exactly in love with any of these picks. And it should come as no surprise, because let's be honest, Peyton, there is no surefire number one pick out of this draft. It's not like when you go into the situation where you knew Kyler Murray was the best player in the draft, or, you know, last year with Trevor Lawrence, like, you knew this was the best player in the draft. Like, who is that number one overall prospect? And if you're Jacksonville and you're picking again, number one overall for the second successive season, wouldn't it be best to trade out of that spot to get more picks to, you know, bolster your roster some? The problem is, without a surefire number one pick, will there be teams willing to trade, you know, a bounty of draft picks for that number one overall player when indeed there is no standout, or at least we've been told there's no standout player? Like, is Aiden Hutchinson worth giving up a bounty of picks? And what we've seen, or what we've heard, the answer seems to be no. Reality is, we don't know. Like, my assumption is Trent Baalke will try to trade out of this spot, but if he doesn't like the haul that he is supposedly, or, you know, being offered, I think the surest pick, the safest pick here, is the same name I just mentioned, Aiden Hutchinson, the pass rusher out of Michigan. He's already drawing, you know, parallels to the Bosa brothers, but, you know, I kind of stay away from trying to compare one player or a college-level player to somebody who's already in the pros. I think if Trent Baalke doesn't trade this pick, I think Jacksonville sticks at number one overall with Aiden Hutchinson, although it seems like Georgia's Trayvon Walker has been soaring up the boards. But again, we see this every single year, and those type of picks for me are like boom or bust, and they have a huge potential to be bust. Like, look no further than what's going on in, I want to say, in New York. Help me, Peyton, with the quarterback that's in New York. I keep forgetting his name.
Daniel Jones?
No. In the Jets.
Zach Wilson.
Leading up to the last 2 weeks of the draft, or 2 weeks prior to the draft, we saw Zach Wilson just soaring up draft boards. And I don't want to judge a player solely on his rookie season, but, well, that rookie season was
bad,
or at least left a lot to be desired. So, you know, as much as Trayvon Walker's moving up the boards, I don't think it would be a safe pick to take in number one. So my guess is, if Trent Baalke really does not trade away this pick, it's probably going to be Aiden Hutchinson number one.
Okay, yeah, I like that. I think Aiden Hutchinson, like you said, is without a doubt the safest pick at number one. But I did hear like a lot of draft analysts saying that Trent Baalke has a tendency to draft for like these boomer bust guys, which would kind of fit Trevon Walker at number one. But the only problem is with trading the pick, like you mentioned, what's the market for trading up for any of these guys? You know what I mean? What's the market for trading up for the number one overall pick? You're probably not going to get the return that you'd expect for the number one overall pick. I don't see them trading it. My guess is they're going to go Aiden Hutchinson at one. They're going to wise up and say, listen, there's not a single guy in this draft who's a standout guy above all the rest. Let's just take the safe pick and move on. However, I do want to say this, though. when we're looking back on it, I think we're all going to ask ourselves, how did Kayvon Thibodeau not go number one in this draft?
Again, the same mistakes happen all over again, Payton. We get to this part and teams like to find fault in players. And don't get me wrong, like, I understand why you have to nitpick at this part of the draft. But again, like, I'm with you. Like, we see the situation and I feel the same thing is going to happen with like last year's draft when everyone just started nitpicking at Justin Fields. I see the same thing with Thibodeau here again, that you are going to make an error not taking this boy number one or number two. This is a mistake. Yeah. And I don't know why general managers continue to do this. Like, do not look past the obvious. And Balky's situation is very tenuous because he's here picking for his job. Because they have to believe he's on the hot seat after that entire Urban Meyer fiasco. But, you know, that's a conversation for another day. Like, in my mind, he better nail this pick. And I think nailing this pick is Aiden Hutchinson. Like, you don't have any question marks there.
Yeah, I agree. And it honestly, the whole situation with Kayvon Thibodeau sliding is kind of reminding me of Micah Parsons last year. How did he slide? How did he slide all the way to Dallas? I don't understand that. I think he should have been a top five pick last year and he slid. And now everyone's like, oh my gosh, like how did he fall this far? And it's because exactly what you said, for whatever reason, come draft time, these GMs start to balk and they overanalyze these studs of players. Kayvon Thibodeau last year, going into the college football season, was the surefire number one overall pick. He was the Myles Garrett of this draft. And now all of a sudden he's sliding. And I don't think that he's done anything with his play or even anything off the field that has showed me that he should slide. And with that said, I think he's probably going to end up, maybe if he doesn't get taken by the Jets at three, he might even slide out of the top five. And that is going to be a huge mistake. Huge mistake.
I've seen some mock drafts that have him at six. And I know you weren't live, but you were part of our NFL draft show last year. And I remember in our draft show, I was telling you that Micah Parsons was the surefire defensive rookie of the year without even playing a snap. I told him that is how good he is. Mm-hmm. And if at the time I was in Barbados, me that I'm not looking at him with general manager eyes, can see that Micah Parsons was the best defensive player in the draft. I don't understand how general managers can sit down and make that mistake. And again, you mentioned they're going to make the same mistake here again. For the life of me, I do not know why. Like, how are you looking at that talent and saying, oh, he's not a top two player in this draft? Like, what?
Yeah, it makes no sense. But one thing's for certain, this draft next Thursday night is going to be a lot of wows and maybe even a lot of question marks as well going along with that. But now let's get into the NBA here. The NBA playoffs just started and it is fantastic so far. But the Nets Celtics series is one of the ones in particular that's sticking out to me. Probably the most exciting first round playoff matchups I've seen in a while. The intensity in just game one between both teams was off the charts. Who do you see, Justin, winning this series? And do you believe that the winner of this series will represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals?
No, I do not see the winner of this series representing the East. But let me get to your first question. I mean, there's no wrong answer because Boston could easily win this series, but I have Brooklyn for the simple fact that in game one, I saw the problems that I keep alluding to all these last two seasons, is that Boston's offense is just too ISO heavy. Like, it's too reliant on Jaylen Brown going one-on-one, too reliant on Jason Tatum going one-on-one. Their best players, the two I just mentioned, are not facilitators. And that is a problem because the ball has to be in their hands, but the other players don't get involved when the ball is in their hands. Their only playmaker of note is Marcus Smart. But Marcus Smart is not good enough offensively to demand the ball being in his hands. And we saw the situation in game one you know, Boston built a big lead, but their offense just hit a tank towards the end of the game, and Brooklyn came all the way back. Like, again, I keep saying, this is why you don't have Jason Tatum as a top 10 player, because when you look through the league, you know, Giannis, Embiid, Jokic, LeBron, Steph Curry, whether you want to put James Harden there or not, Luka Doncic, all of these have the ability to make players around them better. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are not that. Boston's defense is elite, don't get me wrong, and I can easily see them winning this series. The problem comes is that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are elite scorers, and Boston had absolutely no right winning game one because Kevin Durant was absolutely atrocious, and they barely squeaked out a game one. Like, had Kevin Durant hit at least two or three more shots, or at least on that final play, not be caught ball watching, fall asleep, and let Jason Tatum backdoor for that game-winning layup, then we're having a whole different conversation. Yes, we don't expect Kyrie Irving to go off like he did for the entire series, but as good as, you know, Boston is defensively, they had absolutely no answer for Kyrie Irving, and I don't expect them to have an answer for Kevin Durant as he gets better in the series. No, the reason why you don't have either team to represent, you know, the Eastern Finals is that both teams are extremely flawed. I talked about Boston's flaw, but Brooklyn is, again, we saw for the first 3.5 quarters, is defensively. They have too many weak spots defensively, and not just too many weak spots, Peyton. Their players are small and just bad defensively. Mm-hmm. When you look at Kyrie Irving, Seth Curry, Patty Mills, Goran Dragic, these are small guards who are bad defensively but deserve playing time because of the construction of the roster without James Harden. Those four players all deserve minutes, but they're defensive liabilities. So whoever wins this series, Peyton, I don't see them getting past Milwaukee, because Milwaukee, when fully healthy, are elite at both ends of the floor, and they're an extremely big unit. Like, their smallest player in their starting five is Jrue Holiday, who is 6'4", and a big 6'4", that 6'4", 6'5". And we see how strong Jrue Holiday is. Like, Milwaukee, with their current starting five, because Bobby Portis has now moved to the bench, they have no defensive liabilities on that starting five. They're elite offensively. I don't see either squad beating Milwaukee in the second round.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Milwaukee's size and their ability to play on both ends of the floor, I think, trumps both teams. But what's so interesting about this series to me, and I mentioned this earlier on the show, was Boston and Brooklyn are like two opposite teams playing against each other right now. Boston is the nitty gritty. They're going to fight till the buzzer sounds kind of team. They're going to give it their all on the defensive end, and they're going to hustle on the offensive end to create shots. Now, Brooklyn is so effortless. They don't play defense, and they don't care about defense, nor do they need to. When you have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, the game just seems to be kind of easy for Brooklyn. I noticed after that game one that it looked like Boston had been more physically drained throughout that game than Brooklyn. And it was like, even though that Brooklyn lost the game, they looked better going into game two than I think Boston will look going into game two, because of the amount of energy that they exert per game. And I think that because of that, and I think that because of, like you mentioned, there's no way you're shutting Kevin Durant like that down again. It's not happening. I have Brooklyn winning it, and I hope they win it in seven, because I want to see Kyrie at TD Garden in Boston in game seven. I just want to see it happen as a fan of the game. I think that would be amazing to watch.
Basketball deserves it. Like,
exactly.
And, you know that the crowd is going to come for Kyrie Irving. But I think it's a bad decision, because for all of Kyrie Irving's faults, and he has a lot of them, he likes that. He loves the moment. Like, he is a big game player, whether, you know, he is as efficient or, sorry, he is as productive as he should be, because I think Kyrie Irving is a top 10 talent, but just doesn't play to that top 10 talent. Mm-hmm. The reality is, we've seen over his career, whether it was against Golden State or against the same Boston, like, Kyrie Irving lives for big game moments, especially, we saw it the other month against Philadelphia when James Harden first moved to Philadelphia. Kyrie Irving loves these moments, so it would be best for the Boston crowd to, you know, bring it down just a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like there's a fine line to walk between fans and players, the relationship, especially in the NBA, because like I was saying this earlier, there's nothing like the NBA where you can actually reach out and you can touch the player, like he's within arm's distance of you. Boston, they do have a tendency to get a little rowdy, no doubt about that, to say the least. But I hope that with it, at the end of the day, that everyone keeps it within good sport. You know what I mean?
That's never going to happen in two places, particularly Boston and Utah. It's never going to happen in those two places. So
yeah,
it is what it is.
It is what it is. But I still want to see a game seven, though. I really want to see Kyrie game seven. And it's going to bring me back. It's probably going to bring me a little bit of sadness seeing Kyrie in a game seven after he left the Cavs. But anyways, a series that I do want to see before the playoffs are over, though. Suns and Warriors. They seem to be the two hottest teams in the West right now. I know the Suns took a tough loss last night, but you kind of have to give that to them because Devin Booker is a little bit banged up and he didn't play in most of the second half. Presumably, though, this is going to be the Western Conference Finals matchup, in my opinion. But if these two teams did happen to meet in the playoffs, who do you have? Who do you have winning the seven-game series?
You know I'm a Suns fan, Peyton, so it's going to be hard for me to say or go against St. Phoenix. But last night gave me a kind of area of concern because, no, Devin Booker has another hamstring injury, and the only way to really completely deal with those is to rest. Like, you could give it all the treatment you want. Hamstring injuries heal with rest. And that is now his second hamstring injury. He had one on the other leg and all this. I don't think it'll be too much of a concern getting out of the first round against New Orleans. Prior to this injury, I would say Phoenix, because, like, no, we've seen Golden State's best matchup, or best lineup, sorry, is one of Steph Curry, Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, and then Draymond at the five. That will work against everyone else but Phoenix. And the reason I say that is because if Phoenix has one area of concern, it is DeAndre Ayton dealing with strong and prolific bigs. He's not going to have that problem with Draymond. Draymond is not, for as good as he is, and I really do like Draymond, he's not a guy that's going to threaten you scoring on the inside. He's not a dominant scoring force. That's not who Draymond is. And that is typically who DeAndre Ayton has problems with, either, you know, the dominant bigs on the inside or bigs, you know, that are very strong and can rebound, because we saw it last night. He had problems keeping Jonas Valanciunas off the glass. Healthy, I would say Phoenix wins that in six or seven. Devin Booker's injury, as I said before, gives me a little bit of pause concern. Like, I would say if they're not fully healthy, probably I lean a bit towards Golden State, because we saw at the end of that game how badly Phoenix were indeed missing Devin Booker, although a lot of their issues seem more defensively than anything else. Both teams at full strength, I will give the edge to Phoenix, simply because what Golden State does, they don't impact Phoenix's greatest weakness.
Yeah, I agree. I do want to ask you one thing, though. One thing. I know we're going off script here. This playoffs has been like the emergence of many, many young stars. It's been all about the young stars, really, with Tyrese Maxey, Jordan Poole, Anthony Edwards, and even Jalen Brunson had 40 points against the Utah Jazz two nights ago. Who has been most impressive to you in these playoffs?
It has to be, and I, you know, question when he went number one overall, but it has to be Anthony Edwards. And the reason I say that is because when you look at the other two you just mentioned, those performances have come at home. For Anthony Edwards to do what he's done in one, like, we can call it a playing tournament all we want, But that win or go home situation, the last playing tournament, that is essentially a playoff game. And for him, especially with, you know, Karl Anthony Towns struggling in that game and him saying, nah, I'm going to put this team on my back in my second year and, you know, score above 30. And then to come against Memphis and do it and score above 30 again on the road as a young player, that is amazing. And why it's so amazing, Peyton, young players slash role players in playoff situations typically struggle on the road. Like, that's why home court is so important. Because Steph Curry's, Giannis's, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, they're going to be great regardless of where they play. That's why they're all-time great players. It doesn't matter, they will show up. They have the experience and they just have that talent. That's why you want home court situations. So to see a young player like Anthony Edwards having these performances, huge performances on the road for a young team like that, for the Minnesota Timberwolves, I guess maybe it's because I didn't see Anthony Edwards becoming this player. But for me, it's been so impressive. And this is not to take away from what Jordan Poole has done or, you know, Jalen Brunson's done. But performances on the road, really, yeah, they piqued my interest.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say, though, I think it is absolute blatant robbery that Tyrese Maxey and Jordan Poole were not finalists for most improved player this year. As much as I love Darius Garland and DeJounte Murray had a great season, with all due respect, those two guys I felt like should have been on at least the finalist list for the most improved player of the year. And I think it's showing come playoff time that these guys are really blossoming into great stars in the NBA.
They are, but my whole thing with Tyrese Maxey especially, like, the expectation is not there yet. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, you're on a team with James Harden, who has, for me, has to have the most pressure in this entire playoff situation for me. Then you're also with the league's leading scorer and MVP candidate in, you know, Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, this, the performances are great, but with him, it is so much easier to put up these numbers when the focus is not on you. When teams are out there trying to stop Joel Embiid, and put in the defensive focus on James Harden, it's a lot easier because then, you know, teams are not exactly game planning. I will be convinced about Tyrese Maxey when this series shifts to Toronto. Because, like, one, you're not going to have also Matisse Thybulle, for he's unvaccinated. And you know, it also helps when you could create turnovers again in the open court. So they're going to miss that. And two, like, yeah, Toronto is not an easy place to win in, no matter the situation. So I'm not hating on Tyrese, but when the series shifts on the road, it will tell me all I need to know about Tyrese Maxey.
Mm-hmm. Before you go, one question for all. Who's winning the Larry O'Brien Trophy this year? Right now, if you had to pick right now.
It's hard. I want to say my Phoenix Suns. You know, I'm a huge Suns fan, right? But the problem comes, and I saw it last year's playoffs, and I don't know if we're going to solve that game. This is equally as big as a homer pick. It's the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, the reason I see that Milwaukee over Phoenix, and they do have a repeat of the finals, is because we saw when Phoenix went up 2-0, Giannis just went up another gear, and that's what superstars do. Superstars, they have that extra gear. I don't know that the Phoenix Suns, for as good as Devin Booker is and as good as Chris Paul is, I don't know if they have that extra gear. We saw what Giannis did. And I mean, he was good in the first two games, but he said, no, this is not doing it. I am going to take it up that notch. I mean, Peyton, not sure if you remember, he had a 50-piece in the clincher in Game 6. I don't know that if need be that Devin Booker has that in him for Game 6 or Game 7 of the NBA Finals. I do know Giannis is that guy. I've said this over and over again, and you know Dwayne Marcus and Jerm have laughed at me. I've said this for the last four seasons. Giannis Antetokounmpo is the best player in the league. And superstars win titles. Peyton, sorry to go on this rant, but let's look at recent history. Like, since the Detroit Pistons shocked the world and beat the Los Angeles Lakers for that title in 2004, look at all the other titles since. It's been Shaq or Kobe. It's been Dwayne Wade. It's been Tim Duncan. It's been Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Steph Curry, Giannis Antetokounmpo. You win titles on the play of superstars. And Devin Booker is very good. Chris Paul is an all-time great point guard. I am not sure if I'm classifying either player as a superstar. Giannis is that dude, and I do not see anyone in the NBA stopping Giannis, because Giannis, as humble as he is, Payton, he's hungry. You never see him settle. He is hungry. If you have to ask me, you put me on the spot, I have Milwaukee repeating.
That would be huge, because Giannis would then enter the, like, already getting up there with, like, some of the greats of all time with the hardware that he's got at such a young age. You'd have two finals, presumably two finals MVPs, right? And two league MVPs before he's even, what, 25, right?
Well, before he's, like, 27 or 28. And a defensive player of the year, don't forget that. Like, in the four-year span that we're talking about, this man has two league MVPs, a finals MVP on top of a defensive player of the year. Mm-hmm. I dare you to name a player of recent vintage that has that in the last 4 years, or recently.
And what's incredible about Giannis's, like, dominant run here that he's having is that he's doing it all without a consistent 3-point shot. In an NBA that almost revolves around the 3-point shot, it's almost kind of like what Derrick Henry's doing in the NFL, where obviously not to the extent that it's like a one-man band winning championships, blah, blah, blah. But he's doing something that even when running was a thing, sometimes wasn't done. But Giannis is doing this. It's like he's almost out of his era, but still great in a way. And it's brilliant to watch. He's by far the most physically dominant player on the planet right now. I think I'm willing to call him the best player in the league right now, just because he's proven it. He's proven it, and not a lot of people have. But I do have a hard time saying he's better than LeBron right now, because until further notice, LeBron is LeBron.
I could give you that.
Yeah. But he's up there. Don't get me wrong.
I'll say this, Payton. Giannis is already a top 30 player of all time. I am that guy. Like the hardware he has, I think he's already a top 30 player of all time.
Do you think you'll make it out to a playoff game this year?
Pardon? There's no... Like, I am upset with myself that I didn't find a way to make it to a finals game. Mm-hmm. Because obviously that's my team, the Phoenix Suns, and then my hometown team, the Milwaukee Bucks. So, like, I'm kicking myself, but I'm not going to make that same mistake this year. So I'm not going to miss a game. You put me on the spot, Payton, but what about you? Who do you have winning the title?
Right now, I'm still going to go with Phoenix. Phoenix, all year, was consistently the best team in the NBA. No one could really touch them. I think that they're going to have a hard time getting out of the West, because Memphis is a tough physical team. The Warriors are a lot to deal with. My concern with Phoenix isn't necessarily what they're going to do in the West. It's what's going to happen when they get out, because they're going to be exhausted once they get to the finals. I think they're going to handle the Warriors. I think that they're going to get out of the West. But when you go against Giannis, And you go against the Bucks, which I would say are going to be in the finals. I think it might be a rematch of Suns Bucks. The Bucks have an easier road. The Bucks don't have to go through these powerhouse teams that I feel like are more physical in the West, especially if Giannis goes against Brooklyn, because they're not taxing to play against, really. They should breeze through Brooklyn, really. I would go Suns right now, pending on Booker's health. If everyone's healthy, I feel like from top to bottom, the Suns are the best team in the league. They have been since the season started. And for that, I would go Suns probably in 6 or 7 games against the Bucks.
I would love to hear that. I absolutely would love that, Peyton. But as I say, like, I don't know that a team without a superstar is winning an NBA title in this era. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I mean, Booker had 31 at half. Who knows what he could have done if he had played the entire game. You know what I mean? So maybe that was him getting into that other gear that you mentioned. Maybe he kind of found that. And if he did find that, maybe he'll be able to carry it on if he's healthy throughout the playoffs, which then would be, you could hope, right? We could hope, but he has it in him. I think he does. I think Booker has it in him to have that second gear. But like you said, we just haven't seen him do it yet. We haven't seen him do it. But with that mixed with the depth of the team and the coaching of the team, I think it gives them an advantage over Milwaukee, because Monty Williams is light years above Budenholzer in Milwaukee, in my opinion. So I think it's going to be another close matchup. I don't see Milwaukee winning four in a row, though. If Phoenix goes up 2-0 again, Milwaukee's not coming back this time.
I don't, but I'm not the biggest Mike Budenholzer fan. I will say, though, when Phoenix went up 2, Budenholzer outcoached Monty Williams the rest of the way, and I was shocked. Mm-hmm. Because he made like 2 minor changes and Monty has never responded. He moved Drew Holiday onto Chris Paul, and that just changed everything. And then he stopped worrying about what Phoenix wanted to do inside the arc. He said, okay, if you're going to beat me, I am going to take away these open looks for Jay Crowder and Mikal Bridges. Like, I am going to sit down on this arc. And if Devin Booker and Chris Paul want to score contested mid-range jumpers the entire finals, he said, so be it. And they completely ignored DeAndre Ayton, by the way, too. Like, they're like, very well. Whatever DeAndre Ayton wants to do, that's his business. Like, that has nothing to do with us. Like, whatever he wants to do. Like, I thought those were brilliant coaching changes. Mm-hmm. But I am with you. Monty Williams is a superior coach.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna be so much fun to see. I mean, we still have a long way to go. It still is round one, but this round one has felt like a different kind of round one, in my opinion. Like, there's a lot of things that could be changed here and could be kind of revealed to us in round one that I think will carry on for the rest of the playoffs. But Justin, thank you for coming on, man. Of course, man. But before you go, just let the audience know what you're up to and what you've got going on next and where to find you and everything.
Well, as you know, you gave me the opportunity to come on here, then I'll break some news here. Our next episode, well, first, how to find us. Like, we are on most socials. Sorry, we are not exactly a podcast. We are a live show, so you won't find us on, you know, Spotify, iTunes, etc. But we are on Instagram. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. And our main platform is YouTube. So type in hashtag this just in. Please be sure to put the hashtag you do not want to be taken to Max Kellerman's ESPN show. So that is indeed hashtag this just in. We are live every Monday night, 7 p.m. 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on YouTube every Monday night. We have been off for the last 2 weeks preparing for a very special episode this Monday. And it is indeed an all-female episode. And we will be talking about women in sports. How have they been marginalized? How have they been looked at? And from the angle of media, athletes, and fan perspective, we have it all covered. So I personally will not be on the show, but, you know, leave you all in the capable hands of Marsha or other hosts. So Marsha Boyce will be leading that all-female cast. We are expected to have none other than the mother of NBA player Terrence Mann, who is an assistant coach with the Atlanta Dream in the WNBA. She'll be on the episode, so please look out. That is Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, hashtag this just in on YouTube. We will have an all-female cast talking about women in sports.
Great stuff, Justin. I did not know about that. That is, yeah, you just broke the news here. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm breaking news here.
That is interesting stuff. We'll make sure to put the link in the bio and everything. Make sure you guys look out for Justin and what they've got going on over there at This Just In. Always great having Justin on, man. Make sure to give him all the love in the world. Him and his team over there at This Just In really do great work with him and Neil and Marsha. They've had great interviews, and they're having another one coming up. But on top of that, they've also had guests like James Jones, general manager for the Phoenix Suns, and even Terrence Mann of the Los Angeles Clippers. So make sure you check out their stuff and tune in this Monday for the all-woman show, which is going to be, I'm sure it's going to be fantastic.
But people also, I hope, Peyton, this is a return to an every week scenario. Please, I am not just saying this because Peyton is my friend, but this is a fantastic production, a very, very professional take on all sports. It has been too long for Peyton Doyle to be out of this world. Peyton Doyle belongs in sports broadcasting or just sports in general. So please, 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 people, wherever you listen to your podcast, be sure to get the Peyton Doyle Show.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, man. We'll keep in touch. All right, man.
Always.
All right, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Sir.
Wow. What a great guy. It's always fantastic and a blessing to have him on. Please make sure to check him out. He does really great work. Him and his team over there, like I mentioned, Neil and Marsha, they do all great work. Just complete great people and always working hard and posting the best content that they possibly can for all of their viewers. And I hope and wish them all the best. Please go check them out. Now, to finish off the show, I do have some closing remarks I want to make. I want to share my thoughts on the Browns extending Denzel Ward to a 5-year, $100.5 million deal. My initial instinct was, wow, holy crap. That is a lot of money for a corner who's probably just outside the top 5 in corners in the league. That's absurd, right? I'm thinking, oh my goodness, the Browns really did this. But I'm here to tell you, it may not be as big of an overpay as you think. And here's why. Quarterbacks are now getting nearly $40 million in guaranteed money in their contracts. We talked about this earlier. That is a direct reflection of the modern day NFL and the value of the quarterback skyrocketing through the roof the past decade and almost 5 years in particular. But as the price and need for quarterbacks go up, that changes many things for other positions as well. Mainly the guys who catch the passes or the guys who disrupt the passes. This offseason, we've seen receivers really starting to gain a whole bunch more money because look at what the acquisition of a true number one, top-notch wide receiver did for a team like the Bengals last year. Simply adding Ja'Marr Chase to that offense elevated its performance by a mile substantially. Same thing with the Bills. When they traded for Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen honestly was disappointing. He was subpar. He was a subpar quarterback in this league before Diggs arrived in Buffalo. Even look at some of the receivers now in the league starting to hold out for more money. Terry McLaurin being one of them, who, by the way, Terry McLaurin absolutely deserves a new contract. Out of the top receivers of that class, so DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, and McLaurin himself, McLaurin has had substantially worse quarterback play, and he still puts up comparable numbers to both of them, who are also in the process of negotiating big contracts for themselves. But listen, just as receivers' prices are going up substantially, you watch, these cornerbacks are going to start saying, wait, don't we stop these guys? So while the quarterback market is skyrocketing, it's taking the wide receiver market with it. And you watch, the cornerback market is soon to follow because it's going to get really interesting when Pat Surtain is ready for an extension, when AJ Terrell needs a new contract, or Jair Alexander or Trevon Diggs start wanting new contracts sooner rather than later, because in about It's really good. I'm sorry, I stuttered there for a little bit. It is my first show back. But listen, it's really good that the Browns did this now. It's really good that the Browns did this sooner rather than later, because if you do this now, you're paying him this much money. Yes, it seems like a lot right now, but I'm telling you, in 2 to 3 season, it might look like an absolute steal. Denzel Ward might blossom into a top 5 corner, and you might have him as like the 8th highest paid corner in the league. And they got to lock up a cornerstone for that defense for many years to come. So you watch all these receivers starting to demand more money, like Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, Deebo Samuel, Terry McLaurin, AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, and the list is going to go on and on, because Justin Jefferson's going to need a new contract. Jamar Chase is going to need a new contract in the next few years. That number is going to go up. Just as those numbers go up, the guys who stop the guys whose numbers are going up are going to say, why aren't our numbers going up? Where's our money? So I say wise move by the Browns. It seems like a huge deal. Is Denzel Ward the best cornerback in the league? No. Is he the highest paid cornerback in the league? Yes. But check in on me in 2 years. Check in on me in 2 to 3 seasons from now. Say, hey, what happened to Denzel Ward's contract? I thought he was the highest paid cornerback in the league. And he's going to be like 8th, because their price is going to skyrocket, because as quarterbacks go up, the guys who catch the passes from the quarterbacks go up, and the guys who stop the passes from the cornerbacks or from the quarterbacks go up as well. So wise move by the Browns. You signed a cornerstone of your defense and you kept him in Cleveland and you made him happy. And it might be a steal later on and it might pay off. It's a risk. And one thing about Andrew Berry and the Cleveland Browns is that man, oh my goodness, that man is not afraid to take a risk. And he loves doing that. And it's going to pay off, I think. At least I hope it does as a Browns fan. All right, guys, that is it. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And if you haven't already, please make sure to like, follow, and or subscribe. I hope all of you listening have a blessed week. And make sure to tune in next Wednesday at 10 a.m. on YouTube Live, Facebook Live, or Twitter Live. If you can't make it, don't sweat, because the show will also be uploaded here on YouTube and on audio platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts after the conclusion of the show. Once again, I hope you all have a wonderful week. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm so glad to be back, and I can't wait to see all of you next week. Peace out.